Okay, man, listen. It's Simon. The team is back together.
Back. The boys are back in town.
Boom.
You want to know what's hilarious? Okay, so I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, but over 20 years ago, I got mono.
Okay.
And I have this case of it that has stuck with me. So if I get sick, it can turn into mono.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were getting vaccinated, you know, and I was just, you know, I had contemplated with my wife. It's like, I want to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to turn into mono, like, you know, and it did. So I was out for like 4 days. I was just on this bed right behind me for like 4 days. And I watched during that time another 48 hours and another 48 hours part two. And I thought of us, man. I was like, you know, he's the Eddie Murphy to my Nick Nolte.
I just need to start talking like this. Like I could be the Nick Nolte. Yeah.
Come on, Axel.
So, man, I can't even imagine another 48 hours coming out today.
No.
Just can't even fathom it. You know, I mean, with all the racial interplay, and they seem to have liked each other enough to do another one, but
well, they didn't try to cancel each other after they met each other. So,
I mean. Well, yeah, and they just beat each other up. That's the way 80s action heroes solve things.
Yeah.
You have a fight and then you're friends.
We're on the same team now.
But you still call each other, you know, a-hole.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they threw on the N-word a few times. You know, I mean, they just...
Yeah. I don't think you could have, like, you know, like, we were watching Spaceballs the other day, and I was like, this is dicey, man, for today's...
Yeah, it really is.
I don't know.
You know, I mean, because that's the humor we grew up with, and I'm not excusing...
Sure.
Bad behavior necessarily, but I am excusing comedy. We've talked about this where it's just like comedy hurts somebody, but it doesn't have to hurt. You just have to have a sense of humor about yourself.
That's right.
But comedy is directed at somebody, you know, and whether it's, you know, gender, age, you know, race, pratfalls, you know, some kind of disaster that you survived. So now it's funny, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although I don't know why I mentioned a friend of mine dying recently, but I had mentioned it in conjunction with a story about this friend from the sixth grade. And this friend, unfortunately, died of a stroke recently. And he's my age, you know. I'm just like, man, it really kind of shook me up a little bit because I had another friend, same age, die of another heart condition about a month or two prior to that. So I'm just like, wait a minute. I'm not that old that we start dying of heart disease, guys. I don't know what's happening here. But anyway, I'm telling this story to somebody, and I'm telling it in conjunction with this memory of the sixth grade softball game. It's the sixth grade versus the staff, you know, the school teachers and staff. And we had to stop the softball game early because one of the teachers or staff hit a grounder to right field, and he went to go get it, but the ball bounced off the ground and hit him in the crotch. You know, perfect comedy.
It's
so
perfect.
I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, and he died. And I couldn't contain myself. And I'm just laughing about this, and it's terrible. But, you know, that's comedy, folks.
That is comedy. It's comedy. Come on. Go back and watch Big Trouble in Little China. Come on. Pretty good.
I mentioned that show recently to my children because it'd been a while since they had watched it. That was a big favorite of ours growing up. My siblings and I can quote that movie. We can basically, you know how some people go to Rocky Picture Horror, you know, and they can like recite the whole movie while they're watching it. Well, we can kind of do that with Big Trouble in Little China. Right. I don't know why that's our movie, but we have a couple. I think we can do that with What About Bob too. But there's just these movies, and Big Trouble in Little China, to that point, it's like this movie that it's total B movie. There's no trying to say we're going to elevate this movie to, you know, some other stratosphere, because it is very comfortably just B movie. Mm-hmm. However, the dialogue is some of the best doggone dialogue. I mean, it might be the best dialogue in any B movie, and I can't help but think that, and I don't know this, but I can't help but think that Quentin Tarantino must have been ultimately inspired in his filmmaking by Big Trouble Little China, because it kind of has all the elements that he puts into his movies.
Yeah.
Including this dialogue where, you know, the Jack Burton character played by Kurt Russell, every line out of his mouth is cool. Even when he's wrong and being an idiot, he's just like, I just want to hear him say more stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. Just like the scenery of the movie and how that was shot in that time period. I don't know. There's something about that stuff that just, I don't know. It's crazy to me. I think about all those movies from back in that time and I'm like, I miss that. I miss that. It's not funny like that anymore.
You know? Well, and I think a lot of today's directors are making up for budget constraints with taking advantage of, you know, we can do so much with computers now.
Yeah.
But back then they were making up for that with I'm not trying to say it was more creative. It was just a different kind of creativity. And to me, visually, I enjoy the visuals of a movie like Big Trouble in Little China way more than I enjoy a lower budget movie that's using a lot of CGI today.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if charming's the right word, but you know, the scene where he's like Cloud or something. One of the three storms. Yeah. He sees Lopan dead, and he starts to expand.
And remember, it's like so cheesy looking when he expands.
It's amazing. My kids were totally grossed out by it, because I was like, you know, because I can't even remember the situation, but I just said, I don't think he's going to stop. And that's the line that they say when he's expanding. And I was like, well, you guys need to see this little clip. So I just looked up the little clip on YouTube.
Yeah.
And my kids are looking at it, and they're looking at, like, you know, him expanding and exploding. And they're just like, oh my gosh, what is happening? I was like, yeah, that's PG-13 in my era, kids. Yeah.
That's totally right, man.
Wow. By the way, how's the sound?
That's great. Okay. Simon, your sound is always amazing.
Well,
always,
you know,
I mean,
some people have a voice and some people, you know.
That was the voice of Simon Milliman. I'm Simon Milliman. I'm in Alabama now.
Yep. Oh, man.
All right. Give me the scoop. Alabama, Florence, Alabama.
We are loving it.
That's amazing.
We are absolutely loving it. I should say 6 out of 7 of us are loving it.
Okay.
My eldest daughter, who wanted nothing more than to get out of Oregon and Portland, for a variety of reasons, but you know she's 18 going on 19. She's 19 in June, and you know, when you're that age, you just want out. It doesn't matter where you are. You know, you could be living the high life, you know, rich as can be, but you just want out. And anything's a prison when you're 18.
Yeah.
So, well said. So we move here, and we move into this huge, gorgeous home. And now she has her own room and her own space, and it's really like secluded. I don't want to overstate how big the house is, but I mean, I was down there talking to her, and my parents are here visiting, and they came over, and I'm sure the dogs barked when they came over and all this stuff. And they're all up here having a good time. Sunny and I had no idea. We're down there. We can't hear anything from her bedroom. So she's like perfectly secluded, even has her own bathroom, all this stuff and everything. So we're thinking she's all set. Everything's good. Well, about 2 weeks ago, she's like, I'm going back to Oregon. So,
hey.
Well, you know, she's going to go to school. She wants to go to school with friends. Some of her friends are wanting to rent an apartment together and go to school there in Salem, Oregon, you know, just south of Portland. So I understand, you know, I get it. And you know, we've had some conversations about it. She's not financially ready to make this move. So
sure.
She's going to be putting a big burden on her mother and I, but we want to support her and, within some boundaries that we're going to be setting, you know, we don't want to just pamper our kids. We want them to learn to be full fledged adults.
Yes.
But, so anyway, we're, it looks like it's happening here in a month or so.
Wow.
I'm going to be taking her back to
work. Oh my gosh. This is crazy. You're living, man. You're living it up.
This is just like, I feel like it's just, you know, when you have five kids and their ages range from, you know, 10 to 19, you know, you're just getting all these experiences all at the same time. Everybody's problems and everybody's highs and lows all at the same time. And so I have a lot of appreciation for my own parents who today are actually celebrating 49 years.
That's awesome.
Wedding anniversary. So, but, you know, a real appreciation for what they went through with, they had six children. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just not easy. And there's always that one kid. We know who they are. We don't have to say names.
We know. Let's not say it. let's not go there. So,
but the rest of us, such as my oldest son.
Yeah.
So you go out our back door and you walk down this hill and there's a little trail and you walk down the little trail and then you're at this beautiful creek. It's called Cypress Creek. And it's a big creek and there's lots of fish in it, like big fish. And so he comes home from school. He grabs his pole, he goes down, and that's like his dream come true.
Wow.
So he's living his best life.
Wow.
Our dog Kenai has a lot of wanderlust. So we just open the door sometimes and we just don't see him for an hour. And he comes back like this happened last night. My daughter was just taking both dogs out just to let him use, you know, go pee or whatever real quick. Well, Kenai takes off, you know.
Yeah.
And he's gone for like 45 minutes. And how do I explain this? At 11:30 at night, I'm waiting for baguettes to get delivered.
Okay, listen, I'm not sure where this is going.
I'm just standing outside my house waiting for my baguettes. There's a nice bakery here in town.
11:30 at night. I know you stay up late. I know that. But like, geez, man.
But it's really funny. They contacted me last night. And they're like, well, you can come get them in the morning or I can deliver them to you right now. And they're fresh. And I was like, well, give them to me fresh.
It's 11:30. So,
So I'm waiting outside like I'm waiting for my dealer.
But they're baguettes.
And for me, bread is the drug of choice. Yeah. So anyway, I'm just standing out there and Kenai comes running out of the woods and he's got like slobber everywhere on his face because he's just been running and, you know, slobber dripping everywhere. And he just comes sprinting out of there and he's so happy and so energetic. And so even the dogs, everybody's living their best life. And Shannon and I couldn't be happier with, the home and the situation and the town and, we got a little spoiled by food in Portland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going out to eat.
I understand that. Yeah.
And I'm not saying the food here is terrible. I'm just saying in a small town, you've limited your options already.
Very true.
So yeah, it's a little tough. I haven't found a pizza yet. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Let's put it that
way. That's tough. Pizza's tough, man.
It is. Yeah. I mean, even in Portland, it was tough sometimes to find like a really good pizza.
Yeah.
But once you find it, then you got it.
Yeah.
And here, I don't know, we've been to like three or four places and haven't found it yet.
Yeah. Small towns. Actually, my business partner and I, we were discussing up here because it's like a 5,000 person town. It's tiny, you know, but it's right on the border, 35 minutes from Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
And the border being closed sucks so bad. Because that's where I would go out to eat because it's like 10 minutes from my house to cross the border. And you got this big international, you know, consortium of foods, like because, you know, Vancouverans, it's crazy eclectic.
Vancouver's
you know, oh my
town,
goodness.
Yeah.
It's like, and White Rock right across the border. Amazing beach town food. So now we're like, no one has that. And the food here is not great. I feel your pain. I feel your pain, Simon.
Yeah, well, you know, it's okay. I mean, it's what we do to enjoy all the other things.
That's right.
No,
that's right. So well, how's the music been though? The music okay. Has the music been like pouring out of you or no?
When I sit down and actually do it.
When you're not waiting for baguettes.
Yeah, when I'm not waiting for baguettes. I can tell this is going to be a thing now.
I'm bringing it back. Yeah. It's my job.
Well, you know, transitions are difficult, even really good transitions. There's just a lot to do. So even getting here. So I can't remember if I think I did. So the moving company took forever to get here.
Oh, yeah. You were telling me about this.
And then when they showed up, over $5,000 worth of my best gear doesn't show up.
Yeah.
So we're in the midst of filing a claim and doing all this stuff, you know. So even just setting up, you know, to try and make any music whatsoever was kind of a challenge, you know. And but I finally got some stuff set up. And then when I got it set up, there was all this high-pitched hiss. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, no, the electricity is just dirty or something, you know. And of course, my best power conditioner was in that stuff, you know, that showed up missing. I had to get a new one of those. Anyway, so it's just been this process. Finally, about a week ago, I got things set up to how they are now, to where, you know, I think I have some good audio coming out of the microphones and all this stuff. And so things are finally, things are finally clicking. But so because I wasn't going to have, you know, a good microphone, everything, that's when I decided I was going to do another instrumental album.
Yeah.
And what's funny about that is I have words and melodies to some of the tracks on this album. And I was really tempted to sing on the album. You know, everybody wants to hear me sing.
I mean,
right?
I was waiting for it. I honestly, I'm listening to it last night. You know, it was funny. So you send me this text. Here it is. It's on Texas Sing. So I'm listening to it a little bit. And my wife's like, Michelle's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, you know, we have a podcast, Simon and I, the guys are back. We're back.
Yeah.
And I said, but I got to listen to a lot of music. And she's like, oh, okay. I said, I don't know if I should do that though, because I'm like just hanging out with you guys. And then I get your text. It's like, it's just fine. Just ignore your family.
Just ignore them. Pretend they don't exist.
I was like, how about this? She goes, eh, whatever. So I'm laying in bed, listening to this, like 10 something at night. And I'm like, when is he going to start singing? This feels like some singings are going to be happening here.
Yeah. You know, so the original concept of the album was to work with piano and textures and stuff like that. I have a keyboard under my hands right now. Wow. The piano keyboard here. So I keep moving my hands down here, but you can't see it. It's just
you're just ready
camera.
At any moment. But what's
funny about that, I talked about this with a guitar player recently. Or not recent, it wasn't recent, it was a long time ago. But anyway, it was a guitar player friend of mine. And I was saying, you know, when you have an electric guitar in your hands and it's not plugged into anything and you're just playing it acoustically, but you feel like you're switching parts. So you go down and you flip the pickup selector switch to change pickups, but you're not actually changing anything. And he's like, oh yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I think it's just musicians just go on autopilot all the time. Yeah. So I'm sitting here at this keyboard and I keep making random chords. Just
bing,
can't
bing,
help
bing,
it.
Bing,
yeah. And nothing's really happening. That's but happening. I'm playing something very atonal right now.
Oh, okay.
So I'd be glad
heard
that
it,
you're not hearing.
But I didn't.
Yeah. So, but yeah, the idea of this album was to do experiment with piano textures and different kinds of rhythms and things like that.
Yeah,
so
I get that.
Some of the tracks on there are in like 5 and in 7 and And I'm trying to play within those rhythms to make it almost so that they don't feel like they're in those rhythms. You know, I'm not trying to do like the classic, what you would expect from those rhythms.
Yeah.
And those time signatures. So anyway, it was fun to experiment with everything. And while I was doing it, and when I thought about, oh, I have lyrics, you know, because I just couldn't help myself. I started writing lyrics to some of the tracks, even though I wanted this to be an instrumental album.
Yeah.
I wanted to concentrate, because the moment you put voice in there, all attention goes to the voice.
That's true.
And so I wanted attention to go to all these different textures and rhythms that I was doing. So I was thinking about that, and I thought, you know, I do like what I think these songs would sound like with these lyrics and these melodies that I have. So maybe this album is more like a study, you know, the way an artist does maybe hundreds of studies before they complete the final painting. And I love that. I love going to galleries and museums where they put up samples of the studies that the artists go through before completing the masterwork. And I thought, man, you know, if I could go back in time, maybe that's what I would have made the theme of this entire project of, you know, making so many albums in a year's time, is saying that the idea here isn't to create this, you know, I don't want to say I'm trying to create a bad album either, but it's not supposed to be like, none of these albums have been meant to be my Dark Side of the Moon or my Thriller or anything like that. They've all meant to be just me experimenting with these different genres and styles and things like that. So maybe they are just all studies, and maybe I don't know if I'm working toward a masterpiece. I can't make that claim.
Yeah. Okay.
but I feel like I'm at least working towards something personally, where I'm expanding my own music and production ideas and skill sets and things like that. So it's just been this education for myself.
That's great.
And that's what this album felt like. It didn't feel like, oh, I'm making this incredible album and it's going to really say something about society and, you know, things like that. I was like, no, it's just a bunch of notes.
Interesting.
And rhythms. And each piece has a theme to it. And in fact, I was thinking about doing a video on the first track, Emergence. Because that piece is supposed to kind of go through the stages of creativity, and it's huge chaos.
It's haunting, you know? Man. Comes on, I'm like, this feels like the soundtrack to a horror movie, kind of like beginning.
Well, the idea was that it was supposed to be. So in a lot of mythologies, creation comes from chaos. Mm-hmm. So and you know that we use different words for these things, you know, in the Bible, you know, you might say in the beginning there was the void, or there was, you know, so but there is some kind of nothingness, but there's never nothing, right?
Sure. Yeah.
There's something, and that's what kind of the undermine layer of that. There's supposed to be like this dark void, and then some music is trying to come out of it. And in the case of this, it's that music is supposed to just be representing an idea. And at different points, there's this falling piano. And that's supposed to be the kind of the rejection of the idea. It's like, oh, that idea is no good. And you kind of fall back. And there's a point in the piece where after one of those descending piano things, then there's some real dissonance that goes in there. And that's supposed to be this kind of self-doubt that introduces itself when you're trying to come up with ideas, and you keep rejecting your own ideas. You're like, this is a great idea. Nope, this idea sucks. And in fact, it was really funny because just the other day, like 2 days ago, and this is weeks after I had actually written and recorded Emergence, my wife, to the family text, she posts this little creativity thing. In fact, I'll just grab it because it's a little circle of creativity.
Yeah.
And I'll just read through the steps that it gives for this circle of creativity. It says, creative process cycle. And it just has this, I don't know if you can see that.
I see it. Yeah.
So it just has this little cyclical thing. So yeah. At the beginning, it says, okay, this is going to be way rad. And then it says, okay. And then the next part of the cycle is, okay, kind of hard, but still rad? ? And then it says, anxiety setting in. Wait, please, no. And then the next one is, this is garbage. And then the next one is, I am also garbage. And then the next one is, wait, this is sort of okay.
Oh.
And then it goes back to the beginning. Okay, this is going to be way rad. You know, and you just keep going through this cycle.
Sure.
And Emergence is supposed to be kind of like that. And at the very end of Emergence, you have this very simple, it's like a three-note, you know, musical theme that is rising above the other. And it sounds more heroic than the previous little two and three note, you know, themes. And it almost sounds like it'd be on some kind of cheesy superhero movie or something. But that's supposed to be, you know, finally we're back to, hey, we got it this time. Mm-hmm. This is it. So each song is kind of like that. It has these little ideas within it and it's constructed around these different ideas. It's definitely not meant, like I say, to be like my, I don't know if I'm saying anything with this music other than here's some music.
Hey, here's some stuff, guys. I did some things.
That's exactly it.
It was different.
I played some notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, every time I get the albums, I'd like, I have no expectation. I like it that way. I don't want to know what I'm getting. I just listen and I go, okay, this, you know what reminded me of a little bit of Erebus a little bit, or I think.
Yeah.
Slightly, you know, like slightly. There were some echoes of it.
I think they're spirit brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's what I thought about.
Yeah.
You turn me off, man. You turn me off.
Oh my gosh. There we go. We're back.
Okay, you don't want to hear that's me speak. Really, it's fine. Yeah. Okay. This is where the 48 hours things comes in. I chastise Simon about this. I call him, you know, bad name.
What, you want to go back to jail?
Yeah.
We could take you right back there.
I think he had a baguette order. He was having a mess. That was the whole thing. I told you I'd bring it back.
I was getting a call from my dealer.
Exactly. I'll be bringing it back again. I'll just wait for the timing, though. Yeah.
But yeah, as I was putting this album together, I was like, you know, I guess I do have a thing. I don't know what that thing is, but I guess I do have some kind of like style that I, you know, lean toward, because it doesn't sound like Erebus, but it does.
Yeah.
You know,
there's something there.
Yeah. And I think some of that is, maybe some unexpected chord progressions, you know. And what's interesting to me, and this has always fascinated me, when we use different chords, you know, major chord normally we think sounds happy, minor chord sad. Well, if you use major chords in the right way, they sound dark as heck, because a lot of these tunes are based around major chords, but they're major chords being used, you know, chromatically or some other such thing, so that they, so I'm trying to remember which track it is. It's, I think it's a Riptide Among Us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I remember correctly, it's mostly based around major chords, but it sounds really dark and rather haunting.
Yes.
But it's just the way that those major chords are organized and the way that they're not staying within a key, you know. You know, I'm not staying within C major, even though I think it's in B flat. I can't remember now. Some things in something.
You're like moving your hands around. You're like, wait, it's over here.
I was trying to remember how I played it.
How did I do this?
Yeah. I think the first two chords are something like a B flat to a major to an A major. And if you you could hear that, yeah. You can hear it. It's on the album, but you know, playing two major chords chromatically in sequence is a really dark and haunting sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just love that. It's very interesting to me. I think that's probably where that comes from. I don't know. I was trying to think right now. I was trying to think of all the people. I was trying to send you the tracks last night, I'd sent them to you out of order because I had forgotten. And I'm looking at them right now so I can remember what they are. But I sent them to you.
Common thing with Simon. He forgets his lyrics. He forgets the name. He did create it, just so you know.
I mean. Yeah. I promise I didn't just like plagiarize somebody. And, you can always ask the question, who would plagiarize this?
That's the question.
Some of them are just about... Okay, so that was it. Now I was trying to remember where my point was going. So the album is called The Vanishing Gods.
Yes, which fascinated me, the name.
So initially I was gonna entitle it Gods of Vanishing, with the idea that these are the idea of a god as a creator. But what if they created vanishing? Does that make any sense at all?
I don't know.
What if they created disappearance?
Trippy, man. Real trippy.
So yeah, it was kind of one of those like wormhole ideas where I was like, I don't even know if it makes sense, but I like it. But the idea reminded me of there's like an old Hittite text. Mm-hmm. from like Asia Minor, that old area, like Eastern Turkey or something, I don't know, but anyway, there's actually a text that, let's see, it's about a god named Teleponus.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's the name.
Okay.
It might be Telepenis.
That sounds worse.
I'm not. I'm not a scholar.
I mean,
of this area, we'll go with Teleponus.
I think we should go with Teleponus. Telepenis sounds like something we don't want to get into. Yeah. An 80s movie, probably.
But the story is like this is like a younger god. It's I think his father is like the storm god, maybe a Thor type god or something like that. A more powerful god. But I think Teleponus was an agricultural god.
Okay.
Kind of like Persephone.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember the exact what happens, but he somehow gets insulted and he stomps away. As old time gods always do, the old time gods, even the Christian God of the Old Testament, the Jewish God of the Old Testament, he's very testy, very moody, and I love that about ancient gods. They are more human than human sometimes.
Right.
So anyway, he stomps away and he just disappears. And because he leaves, now there's like famine and drought and, throughout the land. And so you can think of this moral in lots of different ways. He finally gets appeased. Something happens, like one of the gods sends like a bee to sting him awake or something. I don't know. It's one of these weird stories.
It is a weird story. Yeah.
But anyway, he returns and everything goes back and to normal. And I've thought about that. And I think probably the most popular idea to take away from that is that when without God, things go bad. Right. You know, yeah. Probably every yeah. Christian would go with that sure. one, right? They'd be like,
sure.
I actually think of it in a slightly different way. I think of it as society is based on agriculture.
Hmm.
So if something happens to our agriculture, there goes society.
Yeah.
How would any of us survive today, you know, without, and we've seen it slightly during the pandemic, you know, yeah. where we've found, you know, certain things are harder to get and stuff like that. And yeah. certain things aren't on the shelves, you know. One thing my wife noticed earlier in the pandemic is that there were no more pinwheel cookies on the shelves.
Really? I would have never funny. Noticed that.
It's, I mean, it's I hate that kind of stuff.
I don't eat that stuff.
So
go away. That's good.
Yeah, she loves pinwheel cookies. So she noticed that. But you know, and I noticed other things, you know. Yeah. I noticed that cherry flavored things were harder to like cherry flavored sodas. And I think it's because maybe that thing that stuff is manufactured over in China.
Yeah, know? Could be. So, supply chain stuff, man.
Yeah. So exactly. So today's supply chains are interrupted. And if agriculture gets interrupted, you know, I mean, what would we do without corn? Yeah. What would happen to our society without corn?
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought this was an interesting idea to think about. And for me, the Vanishing Gods, I was thinking of this title as in if God is thought about as a creator being, what happens mm-hmm. without any more creators?
Yeah, that's deep, man.
So
actually made me think of something I was listening to the other day. I think this is kind of related, but it was basically how I was on a trip to Leavenworth, Washington. Big shout out to Leavenworth, Washington. It's a German Bavarian village. Yeah. It's crazy, yeah. man. It's crazy.
Beautiful place.
Beautiful right? place. And, you know, reading this article in the car, my wife's driving, I'm reading this article, and it was about how membership in church has greatly decreased over the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But belief in God is not changed. It's pretty high, like 80%. So is there a vanishing God, or is it a vanishing attendance of the way God's presenting for being presented? And is that a vanishing God in a sense? And I don't know. It just made me think about that. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a valid thing, because I think for most people, especially a person like me, and I've gone on record as saying, hey, you know what? The Old Testament's cool, but we need to stop teaching it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't mean we need to stop teaching it completely, right. So, you know, to my knowledge and from my perspective, the ancient Israelites never thought that most of these stories were literal.
Right.
But in modern Christian churches, they're being taught
right.
as literal. And for me, that's what needs to stop. Now, yeah. if you're teaching the Bible as metaphor, mm-hmm. and you're cross-referencing it to other things that happened throughout history, I think that's fabulous. It's wonderful. Sure. But I just brought this up. It was just yesterday in a conversation. In fact, I brought up the book of Job. Mm-hmm. My two favorite books in the Old Testament.
Love that book.
Ecclesiastes and the book of Job.
Well, are you great. Serious? Those are my two favorite. That's right. Crazy, man. That's crazy, actually. That's insane, man.
They're the two most interesting, right?
And very applicable, I feel like, you know?
Exactly. Like you read those and they're full of complicated wisdom. They're not easy. There's no easy answers here.
No.
You know, even at the climactic point, you know, when Job is having his kind of confrontation with God and you know, God straight up tells him, you know what? Humans, not my best creation.
Exactly.
It's actually the Leviathan, which we think is the crocodile. And we're just like, I mean... Talk about stone cold, man.
This isn't my best work. Yeah. this was like the third sequel that I wasn't that into. You know, this maybe this is the new Mortal Kombat movie I made. And not that great.
I mean, if you compare it to Mortal Kombat 2, yeah, it's a masterpiece.
But, you know. Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of tough things going on. And Job, the book of Job, is an epic poem. It's written in the style of an epic poem. Mm-hmm. So I brought this up, you know, in this conversation, and I said, you know, if I was writing something that was supposed to be taken literally, I wouldn't write it as a poem.
Yeah.
You know, if I was writing something that was supposed to be an exact history of occurrences that happened, it wouldn't be in the form of a poem. A poem to me says somebody's taking creative license.
Yeah.
And when you start a story with a gentleman's wager between God and Satan over somebody's soul, mm-hmm. You've automatically, one thing, you've got me hooked. I'm like, yeah. Well, this sounds like a good story.
Yeah.
But I also, you've also told me that this probably didn't happen.
Yeah, right.
You know, so whether or not Job even ever existed, to me, completely 100% beside the point, because the lessons you learn in the book of Job, or maybe not even, maybe that's the wrong way to put it, the concepts that you wrestle with,
yes,
in the book of Job,
yes,
that's what's worth, that's what it's supposed to be about.
Correct. Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's a lot of things. I mean, sorry, somebody came to my door. Right. You're probably my hearing dog, the dog bark.
I
like
do,
crazy.
But my dog does the same thing. It's, you know what? We deal with it. It's life. Apparently, you know, we're not perfect. Clearly, this isn't my best work. This wasn't my dark side of the moon, guys.
That's what God is saying. Oh man,
this is not a thriller, guys.
He's just like, here's some notes. I would like to think that God has made some other planet somewhere else that he's like, yeah, this is way better.
Man, this is amazing. Yeah, over here in this solar system.
Yeah. I don't know about
like a lunch break.
I mean, oh man, I, you know,
here's something
if you take the Bible, you know, for, you know, at face value, and you think about it, you know, you're just like, well, I mean, God committed genocide frequently.
Yeah.
Either he did it through, you know, making it rain, or he sent somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
So he obviously hasn't been very impressed with his own.
No. Like, we need a reset. Time out.
And I can relate to that. I would never want to commit, you know, genocide with humans, but I have contemplated it with the music I've created. Right. You know, like, yeah, that album belongs in the dustbin, you know. I mean, that's
Yeah.
So yeah, back to the point, as a metaphor, I can completely relate to this God as someone that I would want to worship.
Yeah.
Old Testament God isn't the guy.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. He's my style, you know, for the most
Jesus
part.
Jesus is my style.
Yeah.
You know, we'd play some notes together. Yeah. I mean, he flipped over a table once. You got to give the guy a break.
Like, hey, man, I mean, you know, he had to do what he had to do. You know,
listen, if you see what's going on, you'd be like, wow, look at these guys. Are you serious? Like, I mean.
Well, and what's interesting about that is that, you know, Jesus was really anti-money.
Right.
You know, he said it frequently. He said, you know, it's the root of all evil.
Can't serve two masters, man. You
know? Yeah, and a lot of us either forget or ignore the history there.
Yeah.
Which the Israelites didn't have a monetary system. They bartered. So Rome comes along, forces a monetary system upon them. And that's where so much of these, you know, interactions are coming from. And there are several uprisings going on. Jesus is viewed as a very minor threat to the Romans, because he is not one of the people who are trying to do a violent uprising. Mm-hmm. He's teaching peacefully. And the only violence he commits is in his own temple, mm-hmm. against his own people. It's never against Rome. And he's very careful. He's very diplomatic. He says, you know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and unto God what is God's. So Rome doesn't see Jesus as a real threat, you know, which is why Pilate, you know, washes his hands, mm-hmm. of the whole thing. He's like, you know what, this guy, he's not one of the violent ones. But the Jews of that time, they were waiting for a violent leader, somebody who could lead them up like, yeah. a Moses and lead them out of, you know, Egypt. And that's what they wanted, you know, out of this. So, but Jesus was just coming along. He's like, you know what? You just need to love each other. Yeah. And this whole money thing, really bad. It's going to corrupt. Yeah. It's going to corrupt everything.
Hey guys, this money thing, really bad. Yeah. I mean, really. Right now is like, man, I have to say this like over 2000 years. I mean, this money, yeah. thing, really bad, guys.
Yeah.
Really bad. I see it happening more and more. What do I got to do here? Really bad.
It's amazing to me that you have these mega churches and these, you know,
yeah.
you know, televangelists who are, you know, flying on private jets, yeah. and all these kinds of things, who are, you know, claiming to be Christian. And I'm just like, wow, man, I don't know. I just feel like you really missed a big part of the message there.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's like the declining membership in churches. What's the presentation? You know, it's not like there's an increase in atheism. There isn't. There's no increase in atheism or agnosticism. There's still a tremendous belief in God, but it feels like the vanishing part of that is the church and how, yeah. the church has presented God. And if it's with Air Force Ones and, you know, cool jackets, yeah. you know, it's, but then again, I don't know. It's just a weird thing. And how to connect. It feels like we're in a change. We're in a shift with that. It's like people want something bigger than themselves, but then maybe like, you know, something's missing the presentation. Yeah. Something's missing in the presentation. Well, it's just some notes to them. Just some notes here. I mean, I don't know.
The part of that I can really relate with is that I've never gone to any church and felt like these are my peeps. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that the people within the church are bad people. And sure. I'm not saying that I haven't loved and had very many deep friendships with, yeah. people that I've met and communed with in church. But I'm saying that I've always felt like an outsider looking in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've always felt like, I like a lot of this, mm-hmm. but I also feel like I commune better with God and the universe going to the beach.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we're learning that more. You know, we've kind of put people in a box of things, or it's like, it was interesting, the pandemic, right? You know, at some point you had churches shut down and stuff like that. Yeah. And it was a whole thing. And I think maybe made people reevaluate that. Like for me, like I've been a part of this church, Central Christian, for like 18 years. Mm-hmm. Now it's in Vegas. I don't live in Las Vegas. I watch the sermons online and I really connect to our pastor because I feel like he's like just a regular dude. Like, yeah. you know, he's like telling the church, he's like, oh yeah, I was fixing my car the other day and I lost my religion several times during it. And I like that. I like the very, yeah. faulty pastor or the guy you know, he's watching football and dropping F-bombs. You know, yeah. but he's like, I'm in church, guys. I gotta like, I'm trying to be a good pastor, but I punched a wall the other day. You know, I'm, yeah. sorry. You know, like, yeah. and I think that resonates so hard with the imperfections of people. They're like, oh, he's like me, or she's like me. Yeah. You know, he's just very messed up in many ways. You know,
the idea that we're all going to church because, you know, we're trying to get better. Not, yeah. we're going to church because we're already better than all the other people who aren't going to our church.
Yeah.
And I, yeah. think that there's I think a lot of that happens on the subconscious level. I don't know anybody in any congregation that I've been in who would sit there and say out loud, oh man, I'm so, you know, we're so much better than, yeah. these other people. Oh. But I think there's a subconscious thing that happens when you're in any group, whether it's a political party, right. whether it's, you know, anything else, that, you know, there's a superiority complex where you're just mm-hmm. like, I'm so glad that we are part of this thing because yeah. now we're better than everybody else.
We're better than you. Yeah. We know it. Everyone went the global gym on them. Disease is like ugliness. Like, whoever says that cracks me up, man.
Well, you know, as like growing up as sports fans and everything, yeah. right? Like you're always at odds with your best friend because they're rooting for the other team. Mm-hmm. And I love smack talk as much as the next sure. guy. You know, I mean, and I just think it's fun. And especially now because I have no horses in the race.
Yeah.
You know, my fingernails are purple.
Yeah.
I love purple. I've grown up loving purple because I've always been a Lakers fan since yeah. about 1984. I've awesome. Been a Lakers fan. Okay. I don't care if they win or lose.
Yeah.
I want the yeah. best team to win.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want it to be a good game. It's exciting. I won't say that I'm, you know, that I'm not excited if they win, you know, but, you know, if the Phoenix Suns beat them in the playoffs this year, I'd be like, man, you go, Suns.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, course. Fantastic. Good for mm-hmm. you guys, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, way to not have a LeBron. I mean, I'm right. not saying that they don't have great players because they do, but, sure. you know, they don't have players that are talked about every single
yeah.
day on, yeah. you know, even when they're not playing.
Sure.
LeBron James yeah. has been out for like 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. Do you think there hasn't been a day when somebody hasn't been talking about LeBron James on yeah. sports news? No.
Of course. No.
yeah. I mean, yeah. you know, it's just so to not have somebody like that on their team and to be doing as well as they're doing this year. I mean, I'm just like, man, give it up. And back in the 90s, I kind of split my love between the New York Knicks, kind of late 80s mm-hmm. and the 90s.
Yeah. Great time for basketball. My
oh, yeah. Great and I kind of split my love between the Lakers and the Knicks during that yeah. time, you know, and you know, Lakers really struggled in the, you know, mid 90s mm-hmm. and stuff. So it was easier to be a Knicks fan.
But, now it's tough to be a Knicks fan.
But this year, man, they put it together.
I know, yeah.
And Julius Randle, who was on, when he was on the Lakers a couple of years ago, I was really sad when they traded him because when I watched him play, I was like, this guy should be a superstar. And I think yeah. with the right coach and the right team, he's a superstar. Right. And now on the New York Knicks this year, he's a superstar.
Yeah.
He's just yeah. amazing. And so I love those stories. You know, yeah. I love, and yeah. I don't care what team it is and who it is.
Yeah.
I just love seeing people be great.
I see, that's not kind of like an analogy to what we're talking about in a sense, like, you know, I just want to see people strive to be good and be better. And yeah. versus like, in my opinion, I feel like politics have become religion for people. Like the politics yeah. of Democrat, Republican have led their value system. The value system hasn't led other things. It's just like, well, I'm this, so this is how we behave because we're this.
That's the like, perfect you know? Point, man. Perfect. Perfectly said. Yeah. You know,
it's crazy to me. It's crazy to me. Crazy.
And I think you hear that in, whether it's in politics or in church, you hear it all the time. There, you know, you hear, or even sometimes like race, you know,
mm-hmm.
oh, well, he's white, but he's cool. you know, oh, you know, cool. he's Democrat, but he's cool.
Yeah.
You know, oh, they're not Christian, but they're still a good person.
They're still
as
a
if,
good
person. As yeah. if that has anything to do with it.
right.
You know.
You're okay.
Yeah, but you hear that kind of language all the time.
Yeah.
And instead of, and my wife made the point in that same conversation I was talking about that we were having yesterday when we were talking about Job and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And my wife made the perfect point that when you say somebody is a good person, even though they're not this, it's so erroneous
yeah.
because you're somehow disqualifying a part of that person.
Yeah.
But somebody's just a good person. They're a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not this, that, or the other. It's not these caveats. It's not, you know, anything like that. You know, it's like, oh, they're Democrat, but they're still a good person. Yeah. No, it's like, no, they are. That is who they are.
Yeah.
So just love them for who they are.
Yeah.
Meet people where they are, who they are. That's, you know, right. I feel bad for anybody who didn't grow up with Mr. Rogers, you know, because that's
so good.
That's where I come from. You know, that whole mentality of I love you just the way you are. I'm not trying to change you. I don't think, you know, if you see that somebody is struggling and then you think that you can help them with something, that's totally different than seeing somebody who's a good person, but then saying, but you still need Jesus.
Right.
You know, it's like, yeah. I mean, if Jesus is who you say he is, he's happy with that person just being a good person.
That's exactly right.
Without needing any kind of incentive, you know, any incentive for the hereafter. Oh, well, you were a good person, so now you got your mansions in heaven. You know, yeah. I mean, well, what if we were good people without that? Wouldn't Jesus like that even more?
Of course. Of course. I mean. Yeah. That's why I think it's just so mixed up to, like, we're losing kind of the center of all of those tenets, you know, goodness, kindness, love, humility, you know, and, you know, don't make money the center of your life type of thing, you know, like these other values. But now we've raised politics and things like that to be like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
And everything that I do trickles down from this affiliation in this group that I'm part of, which is strange to me. I just find it strange. It's not about values. It's about voting for a certain person. That's crazy to me. I'm like, that's just insane to me. It's like, I'm this. I'm like, I don't know. But are you, wouldn't you rather say I'm kind? I'm nice to people. I care about people versus, oh no, I could never do that because I'm part of this party. I'm like, your party has, or you're this party, that party has the, you know, the governance of free speech, or, oh yeah, because I'm this, we're into that. Yeah. And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, we're nice. We got the whole corner. We corner the nice market. What?
Well, and in practice, you know, especially like Democrats and Republicans, for an example, in practice, they are so similar.
Yes.
They might say they're trying to do things differently, but look at the way Republicans spent money in the last 4 years.
Exactly.
And now they're criticizing Democrats for wanting to spend money for the next 4 years. Sure. And I'm not trying to make Republicans a bad guy. I'm just saying this is how they're similar.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so, you know, you can say that on paper they support this, this, and this, but in practice, they're all kind of doing the same stuff.
Yeah, and, doing the same stuff,
and they're that's just humans, you know. I was at the grocery store earlier today, and I have no idea what religion or what not these people practice, but they had clothing that set them apart. Let's just say that you know, shawls, kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I actually thought about that. You know, even their kids were dressed kind of in a very particular way.
Yeah.
And I thought, they dressed that way, they were speaking a different language. I wasn't close enough to hear, you know, even to guess what language they were speaking. But they shop at the same store as I do. Mm-hmm. Their shopping cart looks very similar to mine.
Yeah.
They love their kids. They go to work, they come home. They try to lead a good life.
Yeah.
You know, you take away all that other details, you know, whatever the religion's called and whatever clothes they're wearing and all that other stuff. We're all living very, very similar lives.
Very similar. And
with very similar goals in mind, you know?
Yeah. Totally.
So it's interesting to me. To ask a question, why in the world are we so tribal?
Yeah.
You know,
that's the whole thing. God's like, man, these guys, man, like, what the hell are they doing half the time? this is not my best work. This is like the fifth album in a career. And you're like, I had to put out some music. because the record label told me to.
Yeah, I'm under contract.
I'm under contract. I said I have to do 6 albums. I did the 6th one, okay? Yeah. All right, it wasn't the first album, all right?
God is ever looking down on earth. He's like, man, I really phoned that one in.
You know? You know, a little too much wine that day. I don't know. No, I'm here. Simon, this is crazy. I love talking to you always. I could do it forever.
Yeah.
Our time's up, man. It's up. I mean, we got to have like 3-hour podcast. Got to
hit the red light. I know we do.
I swear. But, you know, we're coming down the home stretch of these albums, man. Coming down the home stretch.
This was number 9. So yeah, I think maybe I need to go back and count them.
My God. Just
and I've got some ideas for the next couple. All so right.
Okay.
Fantastic. You know, I told you before that I wasn't sure what was going to happen, but I think I've got some good ideas for the next couple ones, and we'll see how it goes.
That's how it all rolls, man. Well, listen, your next baguette at 11:30, and you're waiting up at night, your dog slobbering, all this stuff.
Waiting for my next hit.
Yeah, exactly. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dr. D's Social Network. Make sure you listen to future episodes. Also, please make sure to rate and review My Dad's Show on Apple Podcasts in the rate and review section. Thanks, everyone.